The National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 45, as written and directed by Harry W. Junkin. Ladies and gentlemen, Harry W. Junkin.
Thank you, Fred. Friends, as some of you know, Radio City Playhouse is now on the air twice weekly, Mondays and Thursdays. The Thursday evening show is called Eight by Request and consists of eight of the best broadcasts which Radio City Playhouse has presented during the past year. This Thursday at 8:30 Eastern Daylight Saving Time, Eight by Request will present the gracious and charming Irene Dunn in Treasure Trove, a tense and compelling story of three good friends and the mysterious evil which almost wrecked their lives. We hope that all regular Playhouse listeners will be with us on both Thursdays and Mondays. Our show tonight stars Carl Swenson, one of the busiest, best, and most popular actors in New York. We're very happy to have him with us. Here then is Carl Swenson in Murder is the Easiest Way, Attraction 45 on Radio City Playhouse.
I had no idea that anything was going on between my son and Diane Rodell. When Doug told me that he wanted to marry her, I did everything I could to stop it. When I saw finally that I couldn't stop it, I decided on murder. You possibly understand how a father feels. Doug was my whole life. From the day his mother had died, the boy had been the center of everything. Perhaps because he was slightly lame, I felt deeper about everything he did. I didn't want his physical handicap to warp his life. I wanted him to be happy, successful, well-adjusted. Maybe I wanted too much, I don't know. I always had the sneaking feeling that he was a little bit ashamed of my business. I manufactured girdles and foundation garments. I think that he thought it was a sissy sort of business for a man to be in. I guess the fact is I never knew what Doug thought. When he told me he wanted to marry Diane Rodell, I'll never forget the blinding stab of pure fright I experienced. He came bursting into the office, glowing with pride and pleasure.
Hi, Dad. Got a minute?
Well, hello, Doug. Of course I've got a minute. Come on in and sit down.
Dad, I want you to be the first to know that you're going to be a father-in-law.
Doug, you mean you're going to get married? Well, who is she?
The gal who makes millions of women think they can have her figure if they wear smooth skin girdles.
Doug, surely you don't mean Diane. Not Diane Rodell.
Now, wait a minute, Dad. I don't like the tone of your voice. Just because she's a model is
no
reason for...
Now, isn't it possible that you've let yourself get carried away? I mean, a beautiful girl like that
And what?
Doug, I want you to be happy, but please, Doug, not Diane Rodell.
Why do you say not Diane Rodell like that for?
Because I know what she is.
Dad.
She's a very experienced little number, and she knows that you'll own this business someday. She's the patient, careful type.
Dad.
And she's grasping and greedy.
Cut it out,
she's
Dad.
She's cheap and common and no good.
Cut it out, Dad.
Doug, you can't. You can't. I won't let you.
If you're going to talk like that, let's drop the subject.
Doug, now, please, let's not quarrel, but please, let's talk this thing over.
There's nothing to talk over.
Doug. You're making a mistake. You're making a terrible mistake. The girl is no good. Believe me, I know.
I just can't let you do this.
What do you mean, let me?
That's exactly what I mean. I won't let you.
Well, I'm afraid you won't be able to stop me.
Do you mean to say that you've never figured out why Diane Rodell, with her looks, would marry a 24-year-old kid with a lame foot?
Dad, after that one, there's nothing much left for us to say.
Hello, Miss Campbell. Mr. Feeney there? Or would you ask him to step into my office for a moment? It's urgent. Thanks.
Oh, he can't do it. He just can't do it.
Mary, I promise you, I won't let him do it. I won't let our boy marry that girl.
Hello, Frank. You got something in your mind?
Doug's going to marry Diane Rodell.
Yes, I know.
You know?
Diane phoned me this morning.
What about?
She said that if I had any idea of showing Doug that picture, she'd know what steps to take.
Harry, we've been partners for 10 years. But if it's a choice between your happiness and Doug's, Harry, please, the boy is only 24. You're older than I am. You're nearly 50. Now, please, Harry,
I'm afraid the answer is no, Frank. I'm sorry.
I can't let Doug throw his life away on a girl like that. She's a tramp. She's no good.
Doug was just here, and I handled it badly. I hurt him. I said something about... What could a girl like Diane see in a kid with a lame foot?
Oh, that was a bit rough, wasn't it?
What did you expect me to say? Congratulations?
Well, don't start yelling at me,
Why
Frank.
Shouldn't I yell at you?
If it wasn't for you, that girl would never have met Doug.
I know.
What happened that night?
Well, Jimmy Davis and our advertising department found her and introduced us, and we had a few drinks after work one evening. She asked me up to her apartment. She had a guy in the closet with a camera. It wasn't exactly a shakedown. She just wanted a 5-year contract as a sole model for smooth skin girdles at $400 a week.
How bad was the picture?
Oh, if my wife ever saw it, she'd throw me out.
Harry, Agnes is reasonable. She'd understand.
Frank, Agnes hasn't understood anything for years. She owns my half of smooth skin now. And if she ever saw a photograph of me kissing Diane Rodell, she'd throw me out. I'm sorry, but I can't risk that.
Harry, you've got a big salary. Surely you can live on $15,000 a year.
I've gotten used to a good living. If I show Doug that photograph, Diane will mail Agnes another one the next morning. As long as she has that negative, I'm staying out of the whole thing. Why don't you try buying her off?
You think I could?
Diane Rodell will do anything for money. It's just a question of settling the price.
All right. I'll try.
I'm sorry, Frank. I'd like to help, but I've got my own neck to think about.
Diane?
Yes, who's this?
Frank Wineglass.
Well, how nice to hear from you. Not that I haven't been expecting to.
Have you?
Yes. Yes, I have.
What about?
Oh, let's stop playing games, Mr. Wineglass. I knew how you'd feel about my marrying Doug. Do you want to discuss it?
As soon as possible.
I have a date with Doug tonight. The dear boy's so impetuous, he'll probably want to run off and get married somewhere this very evening.
What time is your date?
Dinner. He's picking me up at 7. Supposing you come up here around 5:30.
All right. I'll be there.
Good evening, Mr. Wineglass. Come in.
Thanks.
My living room is a little cramped. Of course, I expect to change all that soon.
Look, Diane, let's be frank. I don't mean to sound crude, but I know what you are.
Oh, don't make it sound as though I had leprosy.
I'm sorry. Look, please leave the kid alone. He's only 24. He's always been very sensitive. Being lame has given him all sorts of, well, not neuroses exactly, but Diane, he's idealistic and sensitive. And he's in love with your looks, and I can't blame him. But, Diane, it's not right for him. It'll break his heart if he finds out that you...
That what?
That you blackmail. That you've got an incriminating photograph of Harry Feeney. The disillusionment would break his heart. Now, I'm not here to quarrel with you, Diane. I'm here to beg you to let that kid alone. Now, I'm willing to pay you anything within reason. How much do you want?
Oh, I didn't think we'd get down to figures quite this quickly. However, if that's the way you want it, how about 100,000?
Diane, please, now let's be reasonable.
I think that's very reasonable.
I'm making you a fair offer. I expect you to meet me halfway.
Why should I?
$100,000 is out of the question.
What did you have in mind?
Half that amount.
$50,000?
I can't possibly afford any more.
Look, Mr. Wineglass, I have my own sources of information. You're worth almost $500,000.
But not in cash, Diane. If you figure the plant and the equipment, yes, but I can't give you machinery. I just couldn't raise $100,000. Now, please, Diane, please, please be reasonable. I can't let this happen to Doug. I just can't.
Oh, this broken-hearted father act is getting tiresome, Mr. Wineglass. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't be bad for Doug at all. We might hit it off rather well. If you can't pay off now, that suits me. I'll get it eventually anyway.
Diane, I can't raise $100,000 in cash. It's impossible.
Then I'll wait.
You can't marry him, Diane. It'll ruin his life. He's terribly in love with you, and when he finds out...
But he won't find out. If you try to tell him, he'll never speak to you again. He'll say you're jealous and that you're lying. You see, I don't care which way it goes. $100,000 now, or we get married, and eventually it means the same thing.
I'll cut him off. I'll kick him out of the business and cut him off.
You think that'll help? You really think you could stand being alienated from Doug, from your only son?
How do you women get so rotten? So rotten?
If you know what's good for you, Mr. Wineglass, you'll keep a civil tongue in your head.
You're cheap and common and no good.
Why, you...
You are. You're dirty and rotten. And you're not going to marry Doug.
Just try and stop me.
I'm warning you, Diane. I'll stop you if I have to kill you. This was the girl that Doug wanted to marry. Cold, calculating, bad all through. The thought of it made me physically sick. Doug, with his fine young face and his blonde hair. I couldn't stand it. This was my son. This was the reason I worked, the reason I lived. If this thing happened to him, my life would be over. Even at 45, I'd have nothing more to live for. Well, it wasn't going to happen. The next morning, I apologized to Doug. The words stuck in my throat, but I made him believe them.
The things you said yesterday, Dad, are pretty hard to take.
I know, Doug, I know. I'm terribly sorry, and I want you to have the cottage in Newport for a wedding present.
Are you trying to buy me off?
Oh, Doug, please don't hold a grudge. Give me a chance. I've said I'm sorry. Can't we let bygones be bygones?
Okay, Dad. Let's forget it.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks. Well, now can we talk business for a moment?
Sure, what's up?
Would you mind going out of town for a few days?
Where?
Well, I'd like to have you represent us at the National Underwear Manufacturers Convention in San Francisco. You'd have to leave on the Century tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, I know. It isn't much notice.
Well, Diane and I had a couple of things planned, but... Oh, she'll understand. Sure, I can make the train tomorrow.
We'll take her out tonight on your expense account. Really do the town.
Okay.
You'll only be away about 10 days. Take Diane out tonight and then take the morning off, and I'll meet you for a late breakfast, and you can catch the Century at noon. Okay?
Sure, Dad. Whatever you say.
In one conversation, I've regained Doug's confidence and gotten him out of town for 10 days. That was step one. Step two was my alibi. This was going to be a perfect murder. They're not hard, you know, if you use your head. At 9 o'clock that night, I went to my club, the Hampton Club on 48th Street. As usual, Colonel Dover was in the reading room. That's the way he spent all his evenings, reading the Times. At 9:01, I said good evening to him. Good evening, Colonel Dover.
Good evening, Wineglass.
I sat down behind him and watched him for a few minutes. At 9:10, I slipped quietly out of the reading room, through the French windows that opened into a little court, and out onto 49th Street. I walked a half block to Diane Rodell's apartment. At 9:13, I was climbing through her kitchen window that opened onto a service porch at the back of her building. At 9:15, I was sitting in front of the portable typewriter on the desk in her living room. I left my gloves on while I typed. Come alone, Diane. Dear Harry, I need a little extra cash, $5,000. Not much for a rich man like you. If you don't want Agnes to see that photograph, you'd better turn up with the money. Thursday night, 10 sharp, all 20s or smaller. Be sure, darling, that you come alone. Diane. It's foolproof. It's foolproof. At 9:24, I was back in the Hampton Club reading room. I slipped quietly back into my seat. The whole thing had taken 14 minutes. Colonel Dover hadn't budged. He was still there, still reading. I was positive that he hadn't missed me. On my way home, I mailed a letter to Harry Feeney, and then I slept a good, comfortable 9 hours. The next morning, Doug and I had breakfast, and afterwards I put him in a cab with a suitcase and plenty of time to catch the Century. Then I went up to the office to see if Harry Feeney had received Diane's letter. Right after the first mail delivery, Harry Feeney came in with Diane's letter in his hand.
Frank, I'm absolutely desperate. I've got to raise $5,000 by tomorrow night.
Oh, well, what for?
Here, read this.
Well, who's it from?
Diane, read it.
Dear Harry, I need a little extra cash. $5,000, not much. You better turn up with the money Thursday night at 10 sharp, all 20 days. So I'll be sure, darling, that you come along, Diane. Harry, this is blackmail.
Yeah.
Getting us to sign a 5-year modeling contract is one thing, but this is blackmail. This is a matter for the police.
Frank, will you try to understand? Diane is no fool. She knows darn well I can't chance Agnes seeing that picture. So I stick her in jail for blackmail. She'd still send that picture to Agnes. And while I'd love to see Diane in jail, I'd hate to have Agnes throw me out.
In other words, you're going to give her the $5,000?
If you loan it to me.
I'll give you a check in the morning. You can cash it and take the money up tomorrow night. Things were going very well. The alibi and a motive. I could get rid of Harry Feeney, too, this silly, slightly alcoholic little man who's held me back for years. The letter went in my drawer as Exhibit A. The next morning, I gave Harry Feeney a check for $5,000. Then I telephoned Diane. Diane, it's Frank Wineglass. I've been thinking things over. I'll meet your price.
$100,000?
It's worth that much to me to prevent Doug ruining his life.
When can we get together?
How about tonight?
All right. What time?
9:15.
9:15 will be fine.
I want the negative of that picture that you have of Harry Feeney. Will you have it there?
I have it here now. I'll see you tonight at 9:15.
All right. Goodbye. That night, I went again to the Hampton Club. As usual, Colonel Dover was in the reading room. Again, I said good evening, and again he answered me.
Good evening, Colonel Dover.
Good evening, Wineglass. Good evening.
I sat down a little behind him and to the left. At 9:10, I slipped quietly out of the reading room, through the French doors, across the court, out to 49th Street. I was sweating, nervous, tense. In my pocket, I had Harry Feeney's gun, the one that he kept in his desk drawer at the office for as long as I could remember. I walked through the crowds like somebody in a trance. And this time, I used the front entrance of her apartment. And at exactly 9:13, I was ringing Diane's doorbell.
Hello, Mr. Wineglass. Come in.
Hello, Diane. Thanks.
Would you like a drink or anything?
No, thanks. Sit down.
Say, what is this? What are you doing? What's the idea of the gun? What is this?
I'm going to kill you.
Look, let's not play Alan Ladd, shall we?
Last night, while you were out with Doug, I wrote Harry Feeney a letter on that typewriter over your signature. Also typed.
You were here last night?
In it, you asked for $5,000 for the picture that you got of him. He borrowed the money from me, and he'll be up here at 10 o'clock.
What?
He'll find you dead with his gun beside you.
You're crazy. You're
at the trial, Colonel Dover in the Hampton Club reading room will swear I was there all evening.
Now, look. Look, let's not get excited. I'll be glad to give you the picture now.
I'm sure you will.
I'll give up, Doug. Now, look, Mr. Wineglass. Here's the negative. Here, take it.
Just don't move. Don't move.
Frank, for heaven's sake.
Some men will do anything for their sons. Have you seen Death of a Salesman?
You mean it. You actually mean it.
This could be the death of a sales girl. Except that what you have got to sell has been picked over so often, I doubt if there's a market anywhere. Good night, Miss Rodell. To fight with myself, not to run all the way back to the club. Somehow I did the necessary things. The gun beside her, the incriminating negative, the front door slightly open. I was almost hysterical by the time I got back to the club. I caught my breath in the courtyard and slipped into the chair behind Colonel Dover. And very quietly, I picked up a magazine from the table beside me. I'd been gone exactly 11 minutes. It was 21 minutes after 9. And then I let the colonel have it.
Good Lord, Wineglass. If you've got bronchitis, why don't you go to a doctor?
Oh, I'm sorry, Colonel. There's something in my throat.
How can anybody read with that racket?
Oh, I'm sorry. Since I've disturbed you anyway, would you mind telling me the time?
It's not quite 22 after 9.
Thank you.
It was perfect. All evening I'd been in the reading room of the Hampton Club. Colonel Dover would swear to it.
At 10:30, there was a telephone call for me. I knew who it would be. Be Harry Feeney. Be hysterical. Desperate. Want advice. He'd gone up with the money and found her shot. I was quite calm when I stepped into the telephone booth beside the club desk. Hello?
Frank, it's Harry.
Oh, what is it? You sound upset.
I'm nearly crazy. Something terrible has happened.
Oh, well, what is it?
I was supposed to take that money up to Diane tonight at 10 o'clock, and Agnes has dreamed up a bridge game.
What?
I can't get away. I'm afraid if I don't turn up, she'll mail that picture to Agnes.
But
Frank, you've got to go over and explain. She's not far from the Hampton Club, and, well, I've tried to call Diane a couple of times when I've been dummy, but she's not answering the phone. Please go over and stall her off. Frank. Hello, Frank!
Pure, stark terror clutched at my insides. If Harry Feeney played bridge all evening, he'd have a perfect alibi, too. I sat there in that close, hot telephone booth and let the fear rush over me. Somehow I got home.
After three Nembutals, I got to sleep about 5 a.m. When I woke up, the telephone had been ringing for a long time. It was past noon. That horrible, insistent bell beat its way into my consciousness. Hello?
Dad, where have you been? We've been phoning all over for you.
Why, Doug?
Dad, something terrible has happened. Somebody shot Diane last night. They say I did it. Please, Dad, can you come down right away? I'm at the 72nd Street Station. I don't know what's going on.
Doug, are you in New York?
Dad, can't you understand? Diane's been shot.
Where are you? Where are you? You're in San Francisco.
No, I didn't go. I decided to fly instead of taking the train. That way I could spend a couple of extra days with Diane.
Dad, I didn't do it. I didn't. You know I didn't do it.
Doggy, I don't know what to say.
I know I should have caught the century, but by flying, I could spend 2 extra days in New York with Diane and still get to San Francisco for the opening of the convention. I got a seat out on a plane for tomorrow. I went up there late last night and I found her. Shot. There was a photograph. A horrible photograph that I couldn't believe it. I just sat there, numb. And I phoned the police. It was a nightmare, asking me questions, talking about a lover's quarrel.
Well, what did the police say?
Some big guy kept harping on the motive. That I'd found out about Diane, that I'd killed her in a jealous rage. Dad, what can I do? I didn't kill her.
I know you didn't. Believe me, I know that you didn't.
Dad, the way you say that, Dad, what is it? Why are you looking at me like that? Dad, what is it?
I can't tell you, Doug. I'll tell the district attorney.
You have just heard Murder is the Easiest Way, Attraction 45 on Radio City Playhouse. Carl Swenson starred as Frank Wineglass. Marilyn Erskine was Diane. Nelson Olmsted was Harry Feeney and Bill Lipton was Doug. The music was composed and conducted by Roy Shield. Script was based on a story by Jules Archer and was written and directed by Harry W. Junkin.
This is Harry Junkin again. Next week on Radio City Playhouse, Louis Van Ruten in Disintegration, a tense psychological drama of an actor breaking down mentally. All 12 parts are played by Mr. Van Ruten in the most exciting job of acting we have ever heard. We hope you'll be listening to Disintegration, starring Louis Van Ruten, next week, Attraction 46, on Radio City Playhouse. Good night, everybody.
Listen to Irene Dunn in Treasure Trove, Item 2 on 8 by Request, this coming Thursday. Fred Collins speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.